Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
When we look at money, it's important to connect it to income and career. In 2022, we want to pay attention to career as another way of increasing our overall financial position. Right now, we're talking about the Great Resignation, and today I have behavioural economist and psychologist Phil Slade to talk about what it is, what's behind it, and some tips for people who are thinking of resigning. Phil, thanks for joining me today.
It's great to be here, Julia, and this is a really fascinating topic, so I'm really excited about our discussion today and where it might lead.
Please, can you start with explaining what the phenomenon is that we're talking about, the Great Resignation?
Yeah, look, the Great Resignation, I think, is a nice term to explain some people's, awakening in a way when they've been maybe working from home or working remotely or over the course of lockdown, where they've been able to experience, I suppose, a little bit more work-life balance, and the people where that sort of aligns with their values a little bit more, and realize that there's actually value that sits within some of those balancing elements. There's value in spending time with family. There's value in looking at the finances as a couple, I suppose, as opposed to just individuals. You know, we often talk about the pay gaps between genders or between two people in a relationship. And I think people are starting to look at it more like a little unit, a family unit. And they've had that feeling. And so they're going, well, how much money are we coming in? How much money do we need? What are the things that we want out of life? And so they're reevaluating what they need. And this is leading to the Great Resignation, which is a lot of people who are deciding that life, their short time on this planet, is better served by spending their time elsewhere rather than sort of at work, as the case may be. So it's more nuanced than just people quitting, you know, because they don't like the job. I think what we're seeing is that there are a lot of drivers that are driving the decision-making process, and it's not just restlessness, but where they are sort of looking at this question of careers and, you know, where they should, who should be in the partnership, be working or earning more, and how can we downsize and earn less and live simpler? Usually, it's the person who's the most restless in their job who is likely to resign. So, I think all of these things are really fascinating. But that's kind of the Great Resignation.
So, do you think it really started because we all had time to think about things, or do you think some of it could be because everyone's tired after the last two tough years?
I think the digital revolution sort of didn't really accelerate until COVID. So COVID was a great agitator for the digital tools that we're even using right now that 2 years ago we wouldn't be able to use. If we were going to record this podcast 2 years ago, we'd have to literally go to a studio and be in the same time and space, right? And we sort of forget how quickly technology has moved. So part of it is that it's now an option, and it wasn't even an option 2 years ago. And so now that digital and technology revolution, the fact that we're used to that technology now, it's not something that's new, and the fact that people have had time and a lot of people have started to reevaluate what's important to them in life, that it's sort of the confluence of all of those things, and it depends on what people want to do. I mean, it is interesting that the very thing, remember when work, you know, when we started this whole lockdown process, there were people that were still dressing up in suits and going to their day, their work day, that was still maybe behind Zoom, but they were very, like, they were trying to keep their routines of the workplace. After about 6 months, you didn't hear those stories as much, you know, that people didn't need, they realized that they didn't need to hold on to those things. But what's happened is over the 2 years, we've created different routines. And now it's almost like the same resistance to go back into work is kind of holding us back into the work from home, you know, where it's like, now we don't, you know, we want to be able to turn up to work in our pajamas, you know, or you know, insert relevant sort of perk that or thing that we've gotten used to. It's actually us being used to a way of working and trying to hold on to that way of working, just in the same way as we did when we first went the other way. We're trying to hold on to the office a little bit. So I find that really, really fascinating.
I wonder if men will ever wear ties again. You know, that's one of the things that I've been thinking.
I wouldn't be that disappointed if the tie didn't find a return to work. I mean, particularly in Queensland here, when the humidity hits, there's nothing that kills you quite like a tie, let me tell you. So I'm not disappointed with that.
It's interesting what you say about, you know, people getting used to taking their work home and then coming back to the office and wanting to retain some of their perks. It has been, I've come back to the office for the majority of time and I feel like I had to readjust to being back in an office and, you know, getting used to the things you deal with there, which are, you know, people distracting you and so on and, you know, getting the public transport in and making sure you brought your lunch and all those sorts of little things that are just different. And, you know, getting used to the different equipment that we have at each.
Yeah, it's status quo bias, right? Like we as humans like what we know. And so it was scary at the first, how are we going to do this? How are we going to navigate work? And people were scared of the unknown. Those unknown factors aren't there anymore. And so we've got two knowns now. We know what it's like to work from home. We know what it's like to work from the office. And so the fear doesn't sit there as much like it did when it came. But where there is a little bit of fear, and people don't like change, you know, change is just annoying, right? So a lot of people are looking at, you know, well, I don't really like my job, particularly for jobs that are transactional. You know, I think there's some interesting things that if you've got a transactional type job, I think there is no reason to go into work. You're a transactional job, being a job for the money paid, and it doesn't have a high relational element to it. You know, a lot of developers, for instance, that we're working towards, they're working in with Jira boards, you know, and I think that agile working, particularly in the technology field, has allowed for that remote work because it almost works better because they can sort of jump on for 15 minutes, have a meeting, shut off and just focus on work and focus on what they're doing. And they love it because their productivity goes through the roof. But there's a whole lot of relational elements, not just to certain careers that are relational, but to certain jobs that have a relational element to them, which are going to really suffer if people realize that that's a key part of it. And a lot of people that understand that are like, you can work from home if you like. It's going to give me an advantage because now the competition pool is just going to be less because I'm going to be able to close these deals or I'm going to be able to do things because I understand the relational element to it. It's that emotionally, the more emotionally intelligent people are going to win in that scenario because they're going to be able to understand what they need to do in order to win from a human connection point of view. Whereas the less emotionally intelligent people are just going to be able looking at their jobs from a transactional point of view. And any job that isn't just a transactional point of view is you're going to find yourself sort of hitting a plateau, which for a lot of people is fine. You know, a lot of people have gone, I'm earning enough money. I'm doing what I need to do. I don't need to climb the career ladder. And if that's you, then that's what's driving some of this great resignation. They're kind of like doing the math. I can take a 20% pay cut because I'm not spending 20% on lunches and transport and all those other things that happen. And so, yeah, I think that's an interesting trend. There is a little bit of the trend, I think, that's also about the flattening of the workplace. You know, now all of a sudden they can apply for jobs anywhere around the world. And employers can also have a talent pool that's worldwide now. It's not limited to their ability to be able to be in the same time and space. So organizations sort of haven't caught up with that. You know, you still look at job ads still have location as a key part of the job, you know, and things like that. So position descriptions and really basic things in policies haven't shifted as quickly as what some of these expectations are. And what we're finding is people are sort of going, oh, look, that's the PD because we've got to have a PD. But really, you know, in that first interview, then they actually talk about it and negotiate the real terms of the job. So yeah, it's a couple of interesting things there. Organisations are a bit slow to catch up in this space.
So is there actually evidence that people are resigning or is it a bit of a beat up? Is it this wholesale number of people that are moving jobs right now?
Yeah, look, it for people that are in industries where they can't really see it, and I know that in a lot of government sectors, particularly here in Australia, there's not a huge movement of people. I think a lot of so it's hard to see what you can't see. The stats do tell us that there is a large resignation. And most of our stats are American based, but they you know, it is quite reflective on what we can see in the workforce. I mean, in the States as of July, so that was quite a few months ago, we saw that 5.5% of the female workforce had quit, and 4.4% of the male workforce had quit. Now that's a massive percentage of the workforce. And to put it in real numbers, that's 300,000 women, for instance, leaving the job. And I think it's really interesting that there is a gender difference in the stats, a genuine gender difference. That sort of split. Like, yes, there's a lot of males as part of the resignation, but there's a devil in the detail of these stats, is that a lot of the males that are leaving their jobs are finding other jobs, whereas a lot of the females that are leaving their jobs are just leaving the workforce. And I think that's a real difference. So what we're actually finding, when people are given free choice, we're actually seeing a widening of the gender gaps, because it's free choice. Like, you know, it's this weird thing of where we're trying to drive towards equity of outcome or equity of opportunity, which is a big debate, you know, about what it should be. But this is an interesting proof point to go, actually, if you're wanting to give people the freedom to be able to choose their own journey, they will choose their own journey, which means there will be some gender differences that come out. More likely, or in a relationship, for instance, that the woman is going to be more interested in people and the male is going to be more interested in things. Like as you know, these are general population statistics, so of course there are exceptions to the rule, but generally speaking, if you picked a random, you know, couple out from the population, that is going to be the split. So we should see some of that happening, and I think this great resignation should start to reframe that conversation a little bit about, you know, what is equity, what does it look like, and what does freedom actually look like in this scenario, and how do we make sure that we don't misinterpret that data in a way that in 10 years' time actually does tend to discriminate again along gender lines, which I think is disappearing quickly. You know, I think attitudes have changed. But if we start to see that trend through freedom of choice, you know, we've also got to think about, okay, in 10 years' time, how might there be a workforce that maybe is more male-dominated that doesn't lead to discrimination, you know, in 10 years' time, in that sort of conversation. I think that's a really interesting conversation that these sorts of statistics start to help nuance in a more constructive way. And so we can have a higher, more intelligent conversation about what it means for people to be able to have the choice that they want in life and create the life that they want to create.
I guess one of the things that, you know, we found during the pandemic was that a lot of the jobs which naturally had more women in them, the teaching, the nursing, correct, the retail, yeah, the hospitality, I guess those jobs became, well, more difficult for some, mm, and for some just not really a job with the ability to earn money during a pandemic. You know, retail workers were out, hospitality workers were out.
Correct.
And so I guess maybe, yes, that has an effect on the stats.
Absolutely. Particularly in hospitality, I think that's definitely a trend that we see. There's a lot of hospitality, a big squeeze, and there were more females in those jobs, and they felt the squeeze more than yeah, absolutely. That definitely does colour the statistics for sure.
And perhaps, you know, they're looking at retraining now, so that might be a different, correct, statistic that we can look at later.
Correct.
Phil, so with people who are just feeling dissatisfied and they have had a hard couple of years and, you know, they're feeling that they don't want to go back to the slog of, you know, catching public transport for an hour and getting into the office and that, what do you think that people should consider before jumping ship or, you know, the great resignation?
Look, I think with all of these things, you need to try to realize when it's your emotions that are driving the bus and when it's your more rational state of mind. And I don't say that to demonize emotions. I think sometimes we actually need emotion in order to make the decision that we should have made ages ago. You know, we're like, yeah, you're allowed to get agitated with your job. You're allowed to be dissatisfied and go, actually, this is not for me. And use emotion to make the decision. That's what emotion's there for, to move you to other places, right? Emotion, right? So I think it's not to demonize it, but it's to be conscious about it. It's about when it's just an unconscious driver that it becomes problematic. And when it becomes more conscious, so when you realize that it is an emotional thing and that's okay, you then start to make a plan. And I think the plan, when it's when you make a decision to move or change careers or change jobs, and obviously they're different things, you know, I think if we look at changing careers, for instance, that you do want a career change, you've got to plan that. That has to be a plan. You may need, you know, I myself changed careers quite dramatically, and it required me to get a master's degree in psychology, which took 7 years. So you don't just sort of quit your job when you've got a young family and cut off all your potential income sources in order to just follow that. And it feels good to do when you make the decision to throw off, you know, abandon reason and just head off into the sunset and over the hill. And that feels good at the time, but it really sucks a year later. People, you know, even starting your own business, you know, you're your own startup. You know, there's a lot of people that have left their job because they've always had this business that they want to do and they want to go into and start up their own business. Do not underestimate how long that's going to take. The digital revolution hasn't necessarily sped up the speed of business development, which I think is really interesting. You know, back in the 90s, they would always say it takes you 3 years to make a profit and 7 years to become a success, you know, to become an overnight success. And we don't see anything in the statistics to change that. It takes you 3 years to turn a business idea where you've got product market fit. So that's from the moment that you've got product market fit. So it might take you 3 years to get product market fit. Then you've only got product market fit. It's going to take you another 3 years to get into profit. It's going to take you 7 years to you know, sort of reach a maximum. So just remembering that and being conscious of that and being okay with that. And it doesn't matter whether you're starting a bakery or you're doing something with your hands or if you're in the digital world, it's going to take that long to make that shift and that transition. So you just need to be conscious of that. That's not a reason not to do it, but it's about going, okay, we need a plan. And it might, you know, people that are in a couple relationship, sometimes that's sitting down and going, okay, well, how do we look at this? So one person may be doing something less risky while the other person is doing something risky. And you've got to do that in a way that doesn't create resentment in the other partner, right? You've got to be really open about this and be able to negotiate in a way that would be you both win and realize that it's going to be hard. Right. So you've got to make sure if that's your scenario, you've got to spend time on that relationship, right? Because that's the key to success is going to be navigating those really tricky waters. But you just got to have a plan and stick to that plan and realize that the grass isn't always greener, but it can be greener. And I think if you do it consciously and you have a plan, and you're able to change that plan easily. I also say that when you have a plan like this, having an escape clause is also really important. So if you want to go down a path and you say, look, in 6 months, let's reevaluate where it is. And if we want to get out of this situation, what is our get out of jail card? You know, like, well, how do we not lock ourselves into decisions that may not turn out in the best way possible? And that way you can make a decision and be decisive without thinking like you're going to change your life. And having those key moments and reflection points just helps you make better decisions generally. But I think in this career space, I think that's really important to take into consideration. And probably only one other thing is that I wouldn't underestimate the power of bringing, in the right circumstance, bringing your employer into this conversation to say, look, this is what you're thinking and showing your heart and going, this is where I'm wanting to go. And I'm not wanting to do this in a way that has a negative impact on, you know, my job in here, you know, so how do we do this in a way that where we both win? I think for an employer that's worth their salt, they will love that conversation because that shows that you're leaving, but you care about them as well. So you want to leave in the right way. And that's really important because the way that you leave something is the way that you start something else, right? The way that you leave a relationship, you know, even as kids, I mean, I've been married for a very long time, but even before I was married, I know the heartbreak of breaking up with a girlfriend and you know, we all have those memories, but the way that you leave that relationship no matter how good or amazing the next relationship is, you've still got the shadow of that relationship that comes with you. And you've almost got to deal with that shadow before you can have a great new relationship. And it's the same with careers or jobs or whatever, because a job is a relationship, right? You've got a relationship with the coworkers and things like that. So the way you leave those relationships is the way that you will engage in the next lot of relationships on the same sort of axis. So it's really important to look at how you exit. And do that consciously and empathetically, because that's actually going to set you up for success in that next stage. And I think that's really fascinating.
And Phil, I know that you've said in the past that it's important that you're not running from a job, but you're running to a job.
Yeah, absolutely. Running away from something is never the best way to leave something. You know, sort of in that whole way, how you leave is how you start the next one. I mean, like in a relationship, if you're in an abusive relationship, sometimes you have to, right? There are some extreme conditions where you've just got to extricate yourself from that situation, because you might be working for a psychopath, you might be doing something that like, it might actually be an unhealthy relationship that you just need to get you need to extract yourself from. But even in that scenario, extracting yourself from that situation, you kind of need to psychologically heal before you start to move to that next opportunity. Otherwise, it's just going to be mess after mess after mess. And so even, you know, in those situations, you probably need to go and find a job that allows you just to heal. It's not a career change. It's just, how do I get some income so I can heal? And I've had a couple of friends in that situation where they've just gone and worked in a cafe, or they've just done something like that that gets them out and about, gets some money in and allows them to heal. And then there's a moment that healing sort of takes place, and they realize that they've been able to deal with what their past, and they can start looking forward to the opportunities of the future. And so that new opportunity, they are still running towards an opportunity in that, what ways they change careers, they're not simply running away from the past. So they're very, very different things. But if you're not in that extreme scenario, I think it's important to not be reacting and you know, before you, you know, start penning your LinkedIn resignation speech or doing anything that's crossing a Rubicon of, you know, a point of no return, you need to think about that. And you think, okay, I need to not be running away from something. I need to be running towards something. And that's going to help you with your conversation with your current employer, you know, like I said before, because it allows you to go, this is what I want for my life. This is what I need to go to. And I'm not going to be able to do that in this current job. So therefore, you're not leaving as a reaction to them, which is always how they're going to look at it. They're going to go, oh, I understand that. I get that. And usually they'll help you. They'll actually go, hey, we can do this, because people like helping other people fulfill their destiny. It's a really amazing thing. And so they go, they'll be disappointed that that they're not going to be able to facilitate that. But if they get that, they'll become your first advocate, right? And so you need advocates when you're in change. You need a coalition of the willing, and you can do that if you're running towards some opportunity, and that support come from the most unlikely of places. But you need as much of that support as you can get, because it's hard, it's difficult, you know, but it's worth it as well.
Thank you so much for that, Phil. You've given us a lot to think about, and, you know, hopefully people will understand a little bit more about what the Great Resignation is and what to do if they're thinking about resigning right now.
Beautiful. Thanks, Julia. I could keep talking about this for hours, so thank you for the opportunity. I think it's a really important conversation. I think if people do this right, I think we really can create a better workplace and a better world going forward, which I think is really fascinating and exciting.
You've been listening to behavioral economist and psychologist Phil Slade on Friends with Money. Please remember, you can subscribe to Friends with Money wherever you listen to your favourite podcasts.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.